guys, this is kind of a bit of a different episode this week. For episode 14, I am currently backstage at one of the Farmer Michael and Kathleen shows, which we have just opened the new tour in lovely Newbridge, County Kildare. But today, before I came down, I recorded a kind of a special podcast with Cormac Lamb, who is a firefighter from Sydney, Australia. He's actually from Ireland, but he's lived over there for 20 years, so he was telling me just kind of about the bushfires and kind of the crisis that's happening in Australia. So have a listen. It's a bit different to the normal podcast, a bit less humour, a bit less funny stories, a bit more serious, but hopefully you guys sort of get a bit of grasp of what those guys are up to and what's happening over in Australia at present. So if you like it, same as usual, like, share and subscribe, and hope you guys enjoy the podcast and find it a bit informative, at least if not entertaining. Chat soon. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 14 of the podcast. Welcome back to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, where I chat to people much more interesting than myself. Today I thought I'd do something a bit different, so instead of talking to one of my artsy friends or one of my comedians, especially currently what's going on in the world at the minute, especially with the Australian bushfires, out of pure luck, there's a gentleman joining me today who is a firefighter from Australia. So this sounds like the start of a joke, but Cormac, if you want to say hey.
Hello, I'm Cormac, a fresh firefighter. I've only been in it about a year, so I know a little bit, but I probably don't know half of what I need to know.
Yeah, I should point out as well that this is going to sound weird, because this will sound like a joke that I'm chatting to an Australian firefighter in Ireland, but Cormac, you are from here?
Yeah, I was born here, and then we moved away. And now we're back, come back every few years for holidays.
Okay, so you're based in Sydney now?
Yeah, we're in Sydney.
Okay, which, as we all know, is now surrounded by a wall of fire. Yeah. So, yeah, have you been chatting to anybody over there, or?
I've just been keeping an eye on what's been going on Facebook and stuff. We've got an app that lets us know when people are needed or what's going on, like where we get updated. So just been reading that and checking in every now and again. But there's every day the app just goes off, so there's plenty of information to go through.
Yeah, I've been watching the news. Is there an official record? Is this the worst ever bushfires in Australia?
I don't know. It's all relative, because we had the fires back in the 2000s, which were massive. But at the moment, it's pretty big. So I'd be guessing it'd be up there, but I honestly don't know. I don't want to say for sure.
Yeah.
But it's pretty bad at the moment.
And it's, have they figured out if they're, well, I mean, they're naturally occurring, aren't they? Bushfires are. There's obviously, you've got arsonists as well, but the naturally occurring ones. So obviously Australia at present is in a state of drought as well.
Yeah, we've been.
So everything's just drying up. And then it's a tinderbox, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, so what I should explain is, from when I lived in Australia, this is what I know about bushfires. Number one, if you're told to get out, do so. Number two, if you leave it too late, a bushfire can actually travel faster than your car.
Yeah.
Which is a terrifying prospect. Thankfully, I've never seen one. I've seen one from the distance, and I've seen the aftermath of a bushfire. Thankfully, I was never caught in one. But I used to live in Margaret River in Western Australia, which in, I think, 2011, half the town was just gone from one fire. So from that, I know that they're pretty nuts thing. Now, there's a thing that you guys do in Australia, which I'll let you explain better, that I know we had to do on the farm, called the fire break. When a fire breaks out, or if a fire breaks out, what does your fire break do?
Well, it basically, it's like it's his name, it's a break. It's a way to stop the fire traveling. It acts as a barrier. So you can have natural fire breaks, which could be a river or a water source or something. But then you can also have ones that you put in by hand with hand tools, as in you pull, like you dig up the dirt, dig up the earth and make a barrier that way and remove the fuel so there's nothing to burn. Or you can burn the bush itself into the fire, so that way when the fire does arrive, there's no fuel for it to burn, and it just either puts itself out there or it travels in a direction that's more favorable to control.
Would that be in the same respect the way they do it in places like Canada, where they have like the smoke jumpers and stuff?
I have no idea.
Well, I think that's a similar idea, but theirs is obviously, I mean, the bushfires in Australia probably travel a lot faster because it's such dry fuel. So how they burn, like, I've seen footage. Because there's obviously such worldwide news coverage about it, they have now footage of, like, fires crossing roads.
Yeah.
Fires that actually jump, which I'd never seen before. And then I read about somebody had filmed one of those. It was like the fires are so massive, they're generating their own weather system.
Yeah, they're,
which is causing, is it a tornado causes? Yeah. Which fires, it throws out flaming debris,
which starts more fires.
Yeah, spot fires. Yeah, no, I've been in a few fires where I've only seen little mini fire tornadoes, which they're pretty cool to see when they're controlled and in like a backburn scenario. But then when you see on the footage that out of control cyclones that are like going crazy, that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Okay, but so you're based in Sydney,
mm-hmm.
but can you be deployed anywhere?
Yeah, we go wherever we're needed. I've gone on 2 5-day deployments and 2 12-hour shift deployments, which usually end up around 14 hours.
Yeah,
in terms of travel.
Because the fire doesn't give a shit that you need a coffee break, right?
No, it doesn't let us go and, you know, have a sit down for 5 minutes and then come back.
Okay. No. What's been the biggest fire you've personally tackled or seen or been involved with?
We've had a few. There was one property when we went up to... We were meant to go up to Port Macquarie, but then we stayed a little bit south of there. I can't remember the name of the place, but we were in this property that was surrounded by, like, bush. So his house was in the middle of this circle. He had done an awesome job preparing it, so it was clear, like, it was defendable. It was relatively safe, but just the way the conditions went, we ended up being surrounded 360 degrees of fire. And
just waiting for it to burn away?
Well, it's waiting for it to burn and protecting the assets that he's got there. So we protected the house where his kids were inside, like, his livelihood, photos, memories, everything's in that house. But then we ended up losing the shed, like, not from lack of effort, because... Like, we've had some people go in, and it was hot. Like, let me tell you, it was hot. We brought the truck round to try and get the water to the shed to try and save it if we can. And there were about 4 guys on the hose, and by the end of it, 3 of them had jumped off, and there was still 1 guy on the branch, and then, like, the rest of us were just out there. So if it's hot enough for the seasoned pros to back off, I think it was fairly hot.
Yeah. The other thing as well that I think a lot of people don't realise in Australia is you have your fire service and then you also have your volunteer fires. Mm-hmm. Is it fiery? Is that the right word?
Yeah, we call ourselves bushies.
A bushy?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got a bushy or the guys who are fire. Now, basically what that it means is a lot of properties, and I have seen this yet again when I was over there, some properties will have their own fire engine or a little fire truck at least,
yeah,
so they can do the spot fires. So they'll have their water tanker that they use, but the volunteer fire services are in more rural communities, and these dudes they just protect their towns.
Yeah,
it's just that often that it happens. Some of the other things I've seen, which was pretty crazy, one of the things I saw was like a fire bunker, and it was used in Western Australia years ago, and I don't know if they still do them, but it was just the guy told me how it worked. The fire bunker was basically a concrete bunker or a brick bunker, so, and there was no roof, nothing flammable that they could do. And when you got into it, basically the space that could burn, they had a big barrel of water.
Mm.
And you dipped, it was kind of like a big rug or like a really thick material sheet. And to basically the place clean, you kept dipping that into the water and then hanging it up to cover the entrance to the... And I was just thinking, that's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard of. Because as you said, you were on a property that had fire breaks and was still surrounded by flame.
Yeah.
These people were asked, guys who were maybe doing forestry work, to run into the bunker, hang this thing up, and just hope for the best.
Yeah, it's nuts.
So this is obviously an older system of what they're doing. But I did see some footage on the news yesterday. So they're fighting the fire with their back burning. There's helicopters dropping water. There's planes. What more can they do?
There's not much more we can do. You can manage and you protect what you can, and then you go from there. So one really good... like the way that they break it down, we were at a fire and we had some new crew leaders and we had some old crew leaders, and the new crew leaders set up their plan as in, all right, here are the assets, we're going to protect both of them. This is our plan. Old crew leaders came and said, ideal world, you'll protect both, but be realistic. If you can know you can save one and then try and save the other, go for that. So like when you're trying to figure out what more you can do, you know for certain what you can save, and then you just do your best to get to the next thing, and then the next thing, and then the next thing.
Okay, so as you said, I mean, you're only in a year?
Yeah, I've been in a year, but I spent 6 months, first off waiting for paperwork to go through, then training, and then started off with little small fires, and then started getting more and more involved.
Okay, so from that, I mean, is this what you want to do? This is going to be full-time?
Oh, no. This is just helping out, doing what you can.
Okay.
It is dirty and tough and like sometimes uncomfortable, but it's great experience. It pushes you out of your comfort zone and you're giving back to the community. So I wouldn't do it as a profession, but it's a good way to spend time when you could just be sitting at home doing nothing, when you could be out helping someone else.
It's so weird as well, because one of the things I did see was obviously an unimaginable scale. I think it's Ireland is like 6.4, I think it's million acres or hectares. Have you seen the graph of the fire in Ireland? And it's pretty much the area that's been lost is about the size of the Republic of Ireland, sort of, because we've been on fire enough up here in the north. So yeah. That's enough of that. But the scale is huge, and people are evacuating. There's people on beaches just watching their towns burn. There's a glacier in New Zealand that's been
covered in soot
and is now brown. That's the Tasman Sea. Now, I know a lot of people here in the Northern Hemisphere think that Australia and New Zealand are quite close together. They are not. It's a 4 or 5 hour flight.
Well, I went to New Zealand and I sent a photo saying, haha, nothing's come over here yet, as a joke. And then now, a few months later, stuff has gone across. So, yeah. it's scary.
This fire has been, obviously, this fire season, because there's loads of fires. I mean, the place is burning from Western Australia to the east, so... Yeah.
No, I had a check this morning. I think there's 130 odd fires at the moment.
Individual fires.
And 60 aren't contained. And we've had people have been going at this since last February. And then because it wasn't as big, people don't think that the season's been that long, but the towns have been in it for well over a year, constant, like fighting fires and protecting their houses. So people are tired, but people keep, you know, doing what they have to.
Yeah, it must be kind of weird, I think, because a lot of people... maybe me, even till I went there, if I think of Australia, I think of pretty much like 5 cities and the beach.
Yeah.
That's it, but there's 26 million people or 30 million people and they all have to live somewhere. So, but the thing I thought was maybe it wasn't, like, it was obviously nationwide news over there in Australia, but I definitely don't feel like it was global news until it got to Sydney. No. But as you said, this has been going on for a year and everyone was just like, oh yeah, it's another bushfire. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, you can't breathe in Sydney. Yeah. So, which wouldn't work for me because I'm asthmatic, so I would have had to leave. I'd been back in New Zealand. Going, not for me, boys.
You know, it's been nice having a bit of fresh air over here while we've been on holidays. It's, I can breathe again.
Yeah, I know, it's so weird. But how did you end up in the fire service? How did you do that?
I had a mate at work who did the climb for charity in the Sydney Tower, like the, I can't remember what it's called now. But it's basically, it's our Centrepoint Tower. Every year, firefighters climb up it to raise money for charity. I think it's motor neuron disease. And so they all go up in full kit, climb to the top and raise money. And so I saw his photos at work and I said, oh, that looks cool. I didn't know you're a firefighter. He's like, yeah, you should come down. I said, okay, I will. And then just went from there and went down, said hello to everyone, did a quick interview, put the paperwork through, and then waited to start training.
Okay. Here's the thing, when do you go back?
I go back on the 11th, so I arrive in Sydney on the 12th.
You arrive in Sydney on the 12th, and when are you expecting to be sent somewhere?
I could go out that night, or I could go out the following day. If something goes off and I can get out to the truck in time, I'll go.
Are you not worried about sort of jet lag, or, I mean, obviously, maybe you're well enough trained that you don't worry, but...
Also, we've got this thing where it's called, I'm safer, so you make sure that you're safe, so you basically assess yourself before you go out on the truck. So you go, okay, have I had enough rest? How do I feel? Have I ate? Am I under the influence of alcohol? That sort of thing. So you just take 2 seconds to go, will I be okay? And then you make the decision and go. So if I get off the plane and I'm knackered, I won't go. But if I say, okay, I'm feeling good and I can go help out, let's go.
Yeah, it's just such a foreign concept to us as well here, because we have a fire service and we don't have bushfire. Mm. Or we don't have forests that just spot it. I mean, once in a while, maybe some little shit will light a bush up the mountain and...
Yeah, well, last time I was home, they had up near Claymore, I was on fire, and that was the weirdest sight, seeing a fire in Ireland and brown grass in Ireland.
Yeah, that's true as well. But you, you should probably do a bit of background as well. So, I know Cormac basically because his cousin is married to my brother. But as we said, you were born here. But how long have you been out in Australia now?
It would be 20 years.
So you're 20 years out there?
Yeah, so I was one when we went over, and I'm 21 now, so 20 years.
Cool. From being over there from your ones, you did school and stuff, are you Aussie or Irish?
It depends who I'm talking to.
Well, no, but is it weird? Is it,
no, it's...
Because Australia is such a multinational place.
Yeah, like, it's a place, like, I can claim both, if that makes sense. I'm proud to be Aussie, but then I'm proud to be Irish as well.
Yeah.
So it's that duality.
Well, obviously, if you're going to be doing stuff like your volunteer job, where you're helping with the fire service, of course you're, as you said, you're trying to help people, so you're giving something back to the country.
Yeah, so it's like, I'll do my part, but then when I come home, you know, it's home in Ireland, if that makes sense. It's where the roots and family are, so it's that bit of both where, like, I live in Australia, obviously, that's home.
Yeah.
But then you come and see family, and it's like, this is a different type of experience, but yet you're glad to be a part of both.
Yeah. Also, you're really pale like me, so
this
suits you for winter, doesn't it? Yeah, because at the minute, I mean, as well as the bushfires, it is just 40 degrees in Australia, so...
Oh, it's nuts, and humidity is terrible, so I would much rather be in the cold.
With the option to warm up.
Yeah.
We say that as we're actually sitting in a room with a fire, so this is...
I haven't put it out yet.
I know, exactly. Is it, we've assessed it. It's fine.
It's safe.
There's a fire guard... I think the extinguisher's in the kitchen. We're not sure. By the extinguisher, I mean your auntie.
Yep.
Yeah, she's out there. But, no, that's cool, man. I just kind of wanted to get sort of a bit more information, because all we get is what we see in the news, which is this town's been destroyed, that town's been destroyed. The other thing as well is, knowing you personally, and one of the things when I was asking, would you be okay to do it, is this is now actually getting so bad that people are losing their lives.
Yeah.
Is that... The other thing as well is... And I do know this, you can't predict the bushfire, so you can have the best plans and it can, you get a wind change,
You mainly, the way I look at it, everyone is out there to help, and our number one priority is firefighter safety, and we know that that goes up through the ladder, and I trust my crew leaders, and I trust where they get their information from, so you basically have to put a lot of faith in the people who are telling you where to go and what to do, but... From my own experience, from seeing how they train and then watching their example, you know you're in safe hands, because they would not put you in a situation that they wouldn't put themselves in. So when you go out and you hear, like, we've lost a few people from our zone, and, like, I know that a few people who are out there, that must have been fairly tough to go, they're out there with someone and then it's gone, and now you're going to have to go back out the next few days and do the same thing and just hope it doesn't happen to you.
Yeah.
But again, it's bigger than yourself. You don't worry about getting injured. You trust that you're doing the right thing, and the people who are telling you where to go, they know what they're doing. And so most of the time it works, but sometimes, you know, you can't foresee everything.
Okay. And from that, I mean, as you're saying, from being out there, one of the things you do, obviously, and it is now too late because the fires are happening, but one of the other parts of your job is, weirdly enough, not fighting, it's prevention of fire.
Yeah.
Which is the fire breaks of what we talked about.
Yeah, backburning.
So you guys, is that stuff that people do on weekends, or is that like what they figure out that this is, the season's coming, we need to do this, we've got this all mapped out? Are you training people in the locality to do it as well?
No, so we don't, like, residents don't go and do it. I think if they started a fire, then that would be the opposite of what we'd want.
Yeah.
So we do hazard reduction burns, which I haven't got to go on one of those yet. But I think they assess where danger points are, and then they go in and try and remove the hazards. So they reduce the hazards that are there. And that can be through backburns, or it can be going through and clearing trails. So there's a whole load of different means they can use. But that is one way that it can be prevented. But it doesn't always happen when it should. But that can be up to, like, it could be too risky. So you could say it makes 100% sense to go and burn a bit of bush over there. But then you've got to take into account that there's houses nearby and there's high chance of that spreading. So... it's a hard one to, like, I haven't been involved, so I don't know 100% the process that goes into it, but it is, I don't think it's always as straightforward as people think. It's, oh, you should have just burnt it and should just be on with it.
Yeah. Well, as you said, I mean, you can do all the fire breaks in the world, but if you get in your real hot conditions, and just because Australia's so massive as well, you have different climates in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's sticky and humid in Queensland, and it can be cold in Melbourne, yeah. It can be dry heat in Western Australia. From that there, it, surely the predicting anything is just nigh on impossible, because, and you can get a big bushfire, but I remember when I lived in Queensland, you were all just praying for a rainstorm.
Yeah.
Which absolutely. I know there will be now.
Everyone's still praying for rain. I've been praying for rain for a long time.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem to be happening for you.
No.
Which would give you, at least if it wouldn't put it out, it might give you a bit of a break.
Yeah. No, I think there's a little bit of rain just before Christmas, I think, when people were planning to get crews ready and they were hoping that the rain would come down and so people could have a little bit of time off over Christmas, but I don't know if that happened or not.
So some people spent their Christmas Day fighting fires?
Yeah, and some people spent their New Year's Day fighting fires as well, or New Year's Eve, so people are out there constantly. Again, like we said before, it doesn't matter. To the fire, it doesn't matter if it's a holiday or whatever, people still have to be out there.
Yeah, how do you actually get structured for how long you're supposed to be out? Because I'm assuming the crew's supposed to relieve you when you're...
So we basically get told... So if it's a regular fire, we just go out and we deal with the situation. But then when they ask for strike teams, they have a plan and we're going to send this crew out and they've got 12 hours. They have to be off the fire ground. So we'll have either accommodation for them to go back to and then they can go out the next day. Or if it's a shorter strike team, they'll say, all right, we'll have relief crews and then you guys are off until you want to come back.
Okay. The other thing as well is, which was on the news yesterday, so it's fairly current, is... the criticism that's been levelled at sort of, I mean, Scott Morrison's the Prime Minister out there. And, well, number one, he went on his holidays, which everyone was a little bit annoyed about while the country was on fire. He went to Hawaii, where there are no bushfires, but volcanoes. He went there, and then he was visiting a couple of times yesterday, and he was getting heckled by the people, because he arrived after the burn.
Yeah.
So, but is there much more the government can do? Like, would, if they deployed the Australian Army in, would they help you, or could they be in the road because they're not trained for it, or...
I think if you put the army in, I was watching a video actually, they train very quickly, they can pick up the skills. So I was watching this army helicopter guy, he was given like a few hours to learn how to drop water and he was then out there helping. So like, you do have assets that you could use, but I don't know if I could say that they could have done more or they could have done less, because again, like we're saying, it's so unpredictable and a situation can go from controllable to out of control in a matter of minutes. So... Look, I know some people are upset, they feel like they're being forgotten, which in some cases is fair enough, but you also don't know the big picture. That's one of the things that we've had to learn, is trust in the bigger picture. But then also, if mistakes are being made, you have to feel free to call them out as well.
Yeah, fair enough. I think just from that, as you said, people will feel forgotten, because they're out in some of those towns and just the fires are so massive. But I did look at the map of where the fires are in Australia, and it's obviously just so hot, because I mean, what was it, there was a temperature record broken and then it was broken again the next day.
We like breaking records.
Yeah, but still, that's nuts. It was the hottest, I think it was the hottest day recorded in this little town, and then the day after they broke the record, so, and that had been the hottest day for 40 years or something, so that is something that's definitely going on. One of the things I'm always amazed by though is how quickly the Australian bush actually recovers from a bushfire.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah, no, it's...
I was through a place in like 2 months after a fire, it was green again.
Yeah.
So, is that just, maybe it's just that is the wildlife and the foliage, it's supposed to be there, it's evolved to...
Yeah, a lot of it has, like, it's developed in a way that, there is a term for it, and of course now that we're talking about it, I can't remember.
I know, I should have Googled you some questions.
No, that's all good. But yeah, some plants do, they naturally, once they get burnt, they then begin to regrow. So it is a natural thing, but I think when burns don't happen and then they build up, that's when we've got the problems. But when we have a few smaller burns or controlled burns, like the Aboriginals used to do, their land management techniques, and so they would do essentially backburns, and that would then encourage new growth. But since we've got more and more communities, those sort of burns become less and less, because then you've got assets that you're most likely going to burn by doing them. So it's that catch-22 of, you should be doing it, but then you can't do it anymore because it's changed, sort of thing.
Yeah, you can't burn that forest anymore because it's now a community. It's a housing estate. Okay, well, I think it's but mostly, it's hard to watch. I'm sure it's terrible for you to watch, because you're watching it thinking, I should be out there giving a hand in. But
no, everyone's criticising Scott Morrison, but then I'm still over here on my holiday, so I'm keeping quiet about that one.
Yeah. You're just like, I'll not be putting any Facebook posts over this one.
No, I haven't showed any photos of holidays to any of the guys back home yet, so I'll wait till I get back for that one.
No, definitely. But I think that's a different story, unless, I mean, Scott Morrison's probably got a private plane. Unless the Australian government's going to throw you a few quid to change your tickets.
Yeah.
You can't really rush back there. But you're, what do you do when you're not a firefighter?
I've just been working at a supermarket and a bakery for the last few years, so it's a completely different world.
Yeah, and you guys get the, are, because it's like Australia and it's in the culture, are bosses you generally understanding about your work?
No, I was working at Woolies and they had a fairly good system where we got paid leave to go and fight fires, so it's community service leave, which was a really good thing. And like, people need you to do your job, but they also understand that properties are burning, and you know, if you look at it from your own shoes, you'd want someone to come and help you, and you wouldn't want some boss saying no, you can't go. So everyone is fairly understanding and pretty good about it.
That's all right. I suppose you have it. So I mean, everyone in your service will be of something similar idea. So
I think they just added a thing where there's incentives now. So if you work for yourself, you can get, you're entitled to get some grants.
Okay.
So I think it's up to $6,000, which would be about £3,000, which isn't a lot, but it's also better than a kick in the face.
Yeah.
Or lack of any money by, you know, putting the community first before your own business. So I think the fires have been a good in a way to let the community know how tough fireys can do it at time and how much they do put themselves forward. Like, I've got a lot of friends who in the service in our station where they work for themselves and they own their own business, and it was getting to the point where they can't keep going out. They've been going out every single day, but now they can't because they need to earn money because they've got kids and they've got wives and they like need to feed the family. So the money's got to come from somewhere and they're not earning it while they're fighting fires.
That's very true. So, I mean, this is obviously, when this is all done and dusted, this will be something that the Australian government's going to have to look at, and or how the, I mean, they certainly can't do this again because they're going to rebuild everything, and then on the risk it's going to happen again next year.
I think it's going to be a massive learning curve.
Would you say, I know you had the massive fires in the 2000s as well. Is there anywhere, and I did see as well, there's now pretty much a giant corner that I saw on the map yesterday that they want to evacuate. They're like, right, we've got a week. You all need to get out because this is what we think is happening next.
Yeah.
But it must be so weird, as you say, coming from the top, where how do you predict the unpredictable? Because anything can change direction of a fire. A rainstorm could put it out for you. You can, another one can happen.
Yeah. I think they just do their best to, better be safe than sorry. So I think they'd rather take the chance and evacuate everyone out if there is any chance that the fire's going to come through, rather than say, let's not worry about it, and then you get a disaster the week later. So
yeah, fair enough. Well, we always have the fire safety thing here. The one that they use here especially was, what was it? Get out, stay out, and get the fire brigade out.
Mm.
But in Australia, you guys are helping the property owners fight fires at their properties.
Oh, yeah, the property owners. We were at a paddock in the middle of nowhere trying to, we call it a walking grass fire. But usually it's a running grass fire because you've got to run to keep up with it and put it out. But this one was moving slow. And by the time that we had got to this top of the hill, a farmer in his own ute who had a little water system came and helped us finish it off. So there are, in rural communities, basically everyone is a member of the RFS in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, I did see that, and some of the farmers in WA would pretty much phone each other and go, there's a fire at my farm.
Yeah.
And everyone would rock up, put it out, and then there'd be a fire over at Dave's farm, and they all rock over to Dave's.
No, it is good how the community does come together. Like, you see it out in like the smaller towns. Like, we were in a town where they didn't have enough drinking water, so we had to be very careful on how we used water to fight the fires, because if there's not enough to drink, we can't be wasting it chucking out the fires. But still, the community comes through, you know, everyone was bringing food in together and everyone helped each other out, which is, like, it's a terrible situation, but it's good to see people make the most of the situation.
Yeah. Okay, so it's, I mean, it's obviously communities are helping each other, so I suppose if you can take any positive from it, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, that's okay. Well, you definitely wouldn't have to worry about any of that over here, as I say, unless somebody lights the side of the mountain up here in Canada, maybe. But I know you're saying you might be deployed. What next? Are you? I know you said you wouldn't want to do this full time, but can you progress in this?
Yeah, you can progress. So at the moment, I'm the most basic firefighter you can get.
Got you.
So I'm just BF qualified, which is bushfire. But then there's courses like village, AF, BA, crew leader, there's chainsaw courses, so there's plenty of opportunities to learn and take on more responsibility. But a lot of it is time based, so you don't want to be sending someone who's only been in the service for like 6 months onto the crew leader course, because experience is a massive thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're not going to know what to do until you've seen it, right?
Yeah, no, so I want to get onto the VF course, where I've seen a few of the training things, and lucky enough to take part in a few of them, where VF, that would be like your car fires or gas bottle fires in houses and stuff. So they're interesting to watch the training.
I think from that as well, as you said, it must be so weird because no matter how much training you have, you just don't really know until they just drop you there and go, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Is it weird or do you do it automatically? Do you remember the training and just get stuck in?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it's repetition. So when you get into a situation where you go, oh God, what do I do? The fire's everywhere. Like, I need to be told what to do. When you are given the instruction, it's all right, ready to go. I know what I'm doing. I know how to do that. It all sort of falls into place. Sometimes you need to be told once. One too many times, just told.
Yeah.
But then once you've got it, like, it sticks in. Sweet. If that makes sense.
Okay. Cormac, I'm going to leave it there, but I will say this. Whenever you do go back, please look after yourself and be safe and good luck, because I know this thing is huge right now in Australia and it doesn't look like it's going to burn down anytime soon, so I'm guessing you're going to have a busy couple of weeks when you get back.
Yeah, I think so too.
Oh, bugger. Well, here, thank you very much for coming on chatting us. I hope you've found this a bit more informative, because you're obviously watching the TV just going, it's a fire, but it's not just a fire. It's bloody everywhere. And to any of my buddies out in Australia that are out there, if you're out helping fight the fires, or if you're living nearby the one that's happening, look after yourselves, stay safe, do what you're told, and listen to what's going on. Thanks for listening, guys. This has been episode 14 of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. If you like the podcast, as always, give us a wee subscribe. Give it a like on Facebook or wherever you've seen it, and give it a wee share. Now, I have to go and do a gig. I have a gig to do now. I have to go and be funny after talking about bushfires. So
when you're up on stage, just think of me.
Oh, thanks very much. So this should be fine. But Cormac, thank you very much for coming, gentlemen.
Thank you.
No problem. Cormac, say goodbye.
See you later.